Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, a podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I'm John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
With us today is Scott Drake. Scott is a tech VP in medical education. He is the author of The Programmer Hiring Playbook, and he is also the founder and curator of LearnLeadership.org. Welcome, Scott.
Hey, thanks, guys. Happy to be here.
So before we get started on kind of like the main conversation, would you tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of sort of how you got started in the industry?
Sure. So I got started back in the mid 90s, kind of sideways. I kind of backed into it. I was working for the student newspaper, the University of Kentucky, as a subpar graphic designer and a sometimes writer. I was not a very good graphic designer, but the advisor approached me and said, hey, check out what Tennessee is doing with their newspaper. They just put a version of it on this thing called the web. And I had no idea what that was. And so I bought the one book I could find that had anything to do with it. It was a book on Mosaic, the web browser Mosaic. And over Christmas break, taught myself how to do HTML and came back in mid-January, built a site for the Kentucky Colonel, which is a student newspaper over there. And quickly got tired of manually producing sites. So I started, you know, writing code to convert content from newspaper, from Quark Express, the program we're using, into HTML. And so that kind of got me into programming. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. I just kind of rode the wave of the web as it kind of started there in the mid-90s and you know, crashed out. I guess it really hasn't really stopped in that point. But so, yeah, I kind of came at it from sideways. I don't have any formal training. Just have kind of learned as I've gone along.
So what do you do today?
About 2 years ago, I joined a company called ScholarRx. We build software tools for medical students, mostly medical students that are preparing for their boards, which is a very stressful time for med students. They've been in business for about 8 years with their software product, but it kind of gotten to a point where the team, they had a bunch of contractors working on it that just wasn't the grade it needed. So they brought me in, they said, build a new team that can build this product better. And so over the first year, I built out a team of about, I don't know, 12 people, and we've rebuilt the entire platform in the we started launching it about 6 months ago when we finally fully got it done. So now I'm not hands-on anymore. When I took this job, they said you can be hands-on or you can be hands-off, and I said I think it's time to step back and let some other people deal with the next JavaScript framework. So I've pretty well stayed, you know, stepped up into the totally a leadership role at this point.
So how have you enjoyed that transition?
So for me, I enjoyed a lot because I've always been kind of a tech nerd and a business nerd and a leadership nerd. I kind of like all of those disciplines. So I like to build things. So that's a great fit for software people. You know, I enjoyed building software and writing code for so long, so I like to build things, but I also enjoy building teams and I enjoy building organizations and building companies. So to me, it's this, you're kind of exercising the same mental muscles. You're just using different tools and different technologies, but you're still building things. And that's what I get out of bed every day to do, is to do that. So I enjoy it a lot. It's people is challenging, but you know, in general, I enjoy it a lot.
You kind of have a varied history in your career. Everything from Microsoft to Silicon Valley and now in Louisville, Kentucky. You want to kind of walk us through that career path?
Yeah. So as I said, I got started in newspapers and first at the collegiate level. But when I started, the professional newspapers hadn't touched the web at all. So we won some awards, some of the first awards they gave out for websites at college media. And that got me recruited out of school into professional newspaper. So I started working professionally for a couple of bigger newspapers around the state, worked for a couple of other things. I was mostly consulting. So again, it was kind of an entrepreneurial thing at the same time. But early on when JavaScript was first taking hold, this was back in the kind of late 90s, there just weren't a lot of us around who had done a lot in JavaScript. And I started looking around thinking maybe I'll go out west, maybe I'll go someplace different. And a recruiter from Microsoft called and said, hey, you know, you should really, you know, send us your resume. And I'm like, look, I'm self-taught. I don't know a thing. Like I'm, you know, can barely stand up and walk. I'm a toddler at this. They're like, yeah, give it a shot. So, you know, I sent my resume, and what I learned is that they'll give a lot of people a shot. You may not stick around. If you're not good, they'll send you back home. But I got out there, and it was kind of strange, because when you come in green, or you come in without the biases of the education, then you can sometimes be a little bit more creative, because you're not thinking of how things have always been done. You're thinking, how would I solve this problem from scratch? And so you end up coming up with some unique things, and that fit well in an environment like Microsoft. So I stayed there for about a year. I had a chance to stay on, but I didn't really want to stay out west. Came back to Kentucky, and then maybe a year later, my boss from Microsoft had left and gone out to the Valley to start a company. He called me up and said, hey, why don't you come out here and run a team out here for me? And I'm like, sure, that sounds like fun. So I went back out to California for a little while and eventually came back here. And I've been back here since, I don't know, about 15 years, here being Louisville. And I like it here. It would be nice if we were closer to the beach, but other than that, it's a nice place to live. So I enjoy it.
So you recently gave a talk at Codepalooza. I believe it had something to do with future-proofing your career. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I've run in quite often to programmers, and it happened a few years ago. I had somebody approach me who wanted to change teams. And his reasoning is that he was working on a team that was working with still mainstream technology. It just wasn't cutting edge technology. But he felt like if he didn't shift to a team that was working with cutting edge technology, he was going to get left behind. He was going to become obsolete. And if something happened, you know, with this job, he wouldn't be able to get another job because his skills, he didn't feel like would be up to speed. And I've heard that a lot. The people have approached me a lot. But the reality with him, and I pulled him aside, I said, you're not going to struggle to find another job in this industry because you become obsolete technically. You're going to struggle because you're not a good problem solver. You don't manage your time well. And there's this handful of skills that kind of go along with the technology. So we focus so much on technology, and often we ignore these other skills that make us a complete developer. But those are also the skills that often keep us employable, right? Most organizations don't care if you're using mainstream technology or cutting edge technology. A lot of times they're happier if you're using mainstream technology, or they're happier if you're come in and work on that 5-year-old .NET app, right? But if you don't know how to solve problems, or you don't know how to learn new technologies well, or you don't know how to play well with others, or you don't make good decisions, there's there's 7 or 8 skills that I lump into that talk, that if you don't do those well, you're going to struggle to have a long career in this industry.
So how did you come up with basically finding out those 7 or 8 skills?
So I kind of sat back and I talked to quite a few people, and I put together some, and some other people put together a few, and we kind of put our heads together, and that's kind of where we got. There's 8. I mean, I kind of rattled off a few. How to learn. How do you solve problems well? There's a lot of techniques in learning. There's a lot of techniques in problem solving. It's a lot of techniques in decision making, playing well with others. Do you manage information well? Like, we're just completely bombarded with information from all these places, whether it's bugs or whether it's feature requests or whether it's support requests or whether it's, you know, things from Slack or things from this or whatever. How do you manage that information flow well? Do you manage your time well? Right? Burnout is a time management problem, mostly caused by the developers. Like, the world puts unrealistic demands on your time. It's always going to do that. The world is always going to ask more of you from your time than you can deal with. So do you have the skills to manage your time well? Habits and routines is another one. And then self-marketing. And those tended to cover the gamut of what just that core kind of skill set. I'm sure there's a few other ones out there, but we were trying to limit ourselves to maybe 7 or 8 that we felt were really core to having a good, productive, value-creating career in the industry.
The old cliche of the developer that you can just feed Mountain Dew and pizza and slide it under the door and never have to interact with them is really proving to not be true anymore.
Yeah.
Developers are expected to have people skills. They're expected to have soft skills. They're expected to be able to gather requirements and go through problem solving and deliver solutions, not just break fix.
Yeah, it's funny. I was having a kind of a one-on-one kind of a half year check-in with somebody I hired. He's one of my younger guys. He's maybe 5 years into his career. And he said that a pivot point for him in his career is when he went from being a maker to being a problem solver. And he had really approached his job early on as I'm a maker, like I'm a tech guy. I'm going to sit and play with, you know, with the hardware and software. I mean, he's all over the place with data sciences, all this kind of stuff. But he's got all these things sitting up on a shelf that nobody ever uses. And at a certain point in his career, he pivoted and he goes, okay, making is fun, but it's more fun to solve problems for somebody in a way that somebody's going to use it. And it was kind of fun. I've been trying to figure that little piece out. And I keep talking to him about him because I like the way he put it, that he kind of went from being a maker to a problem solver. And I think we all have to make that transition at some point.
So when you make the transition from a maker to a problem solver, so as a maker, it might be fairly simple or fairly easy to come up with a new thing to make, right?
Sure.
So you can sort of feed that desire or that hobby. When you transition to a problem solver, how can you sharpen the saw, as they might say? How do you, in your own time, get better at the problem solving?
I think it starts with getting good at understanding other people and what other people's expectations are for the things that you're building. I don't want to go straight to empathy, but it gets a little bit to being able to see the world from the perspective of other people, especially the perspective of your users. The problem solving in general, I mean, there's a lot of times we have different expectations or different outcomes as developers. Like we see the need of this solution to be able to do these five or six things, but you go talk to the customer and they just really want to do these two things, right? We think, oh, it's got to scale. Like early on, every young developer thinks everything has to scale giantly, but then you get into understanding what are all the actual pieces that go into what does the customer really want? And a lot of times they may not want that. There's like 14 things I came up with, don't ask me to rattle them off on my head, but I'll put them in the show notes of when you make a decision, it's like just what technology to use. There were actually 14 things I came up with, and they ranged from how complicated is the problem, how innovative, you know, is this something that requires an innovative type of solution, or is this pretty routine? What does a team look like? You know, is this going to be a huge team or a small team? How much turnover do we think we're going to? There's all these little bits and pieces that go into just some basic decisions around what technologies to use or potentially how to apply them. But early in a career, you just don't have that experience to understand that and make those better decisions as far as what is a good solution to a problem versus, you know, what do I think coming into it, you know, purely looking at it from a developer perspective.
It's interesting. You said maker, and in my head, I'm picturing more implementer. Because early on in my career, I was working for a company that they were implementing, they brought in some consultants to help them define their software development lifecycle. And they defined an 8-week cycle for a project. And the first 6 weeks were all project planning and documentation and putting together very detailed functional specifications. And then they handed that all the details and all the paperwork off to developers at week 6.
Yeah.
And that's when they started to work on the project.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the picture I had in my mind was, you know, many years ago, developers, or at least in my role at that time in my career, it felt very much like, here are the instructions, put the instructions into the computer. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, maybe it's with the advent of popularity of Agile that's just not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. That's not how software is done.
Yep. Agreed. And that becomes particularly important, and we'll probably talk leadership a little bit, when you transition to leadership. As developers, I like to be given problems, right? I don't want to be handed a solution. So for a long time, you're right, in certain situations and certain environments, the business would come to you with all of this stack of documentation and say, here's a solution, go code it. Right. And that's not as much fun for me as a developer. Right. Bring me a problem. So even if they brought me this big stack of stuff, I would say, OK, let's back up. What's the problem? And is this really a good solution for that problem? And that's really popular. Like that works well with some environments. And in some environments, you're like, you know, don't ask, just code it. Right. And I didn't do well in those environments. But it's much more. Especially as the industry has shifted more toward Agile, even with those big waterfall type projects, like we embarked in the last 2 years on rebuilding an entire platform. We've completely replaced product and all the management stuff. This was a huge waterfall like project that we still treated in an Agile way, that we still presented to the development team as problem, 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 and let them help us solve those problems instead of trying to sit down and figure everything out and then give it to the developers. So even in these big big, you know, gigantic projects, you can still break it down into a way that you're working more in problems than you're working in solutions just handed off to somebody.
That's interesting. Did you set to deliver MVPs?
So the market was already proven. So you do MVPs for a few reasons. Do you need to get something in front of a customer so the customer can tell you you're right or wrong? Right? We didn't need to do that. We had a working, functioning product at market with thousands of users, and we weren't going to make significant changes to how the problems that the software solved for the students. We were going to improve it, which we did significantly improve it, but we weren't trying to solve the problem of will the market adopt it. There weren't technical problems that we were trying to. So sometimes you might do an MVP just to say, we don't know technically how to do this. So we didn't feel like we did some early POC work to make sure that we were in the right area for technical, but we didn't feel like we had those kinds of problems either. So we did some early work to say, you know, technically we've proven we can do it this way. We did do some stuff and some prototyping. I'm a big fan of prototyping even before you get to MVPs, that we could put in front of students and some of those things to make sure that we were still going in the right direction. But ultimately we had to get 8 months in before we could start to take parts of the platform down and replace it with new parts of the platform. We couldn't just build something and 6 weeks later hope to plug it in. It's just, we just couldn't do that. But we still were able to organize and structure parts of that project in much more of an agile way.
So let's talk about kind of growing into leadership. So when is developer ready to kind of, or even is that the right question to ask? I mean, is there a set of skills that someone needs to acquire, or is it just the person who doesn't do well at coding, we'll put them in people?
I mean, it could be. It could be that I enjoy being in tech, but I don't enjoy coding, or I'm not good at it. So here's another skill set that I can try to develop. No, I mean, when you go into leadership, you have to say, you feel like maybe I'm going to take control of the situation, but in a lot of ways, you have to be prepared to give up control. Okay. Again, as a developer, do you want somebody to bring you problems or solutions? And what a lot of us do as leaders is we go in and we go, okay, my job up to this point has been to solve problems. So when I see problems, my instinct is to try to solve them myself because that's what got me promoted. Okay. But if you sit there and you continue to try to solve the problems of the team and hand off solutions to all your team members, then they're going to get bored and they're going to be unchallenged. And eventually you're going to be the person with all the problems on your plate. And you can't do that. You can't function in that way. And that's the mistake I made when I first got into leadership. When I first went out to Silicon Valley, I had 8 developers and they were all bored and I was overworked because I had no idea how to lead people. It's a very hard transition just because most of us aren't trained, right? Nobody teaches us this. Nobody says, you know, hey, this is the way you need to approach it. But yeah, you really do have to learn, how do I set vision? How do I communicate a vision and boundaries? Okay, where are we trying to go? What is the problem we're trying to solve? But what are the boundaries we're going to put around this so that we don't go into completely left field? So boundaries might be, we're going to work in .NET. We're going to use Angular 2. Like, help me make these decisions of what we're going to do, but then we're going to establish boundaries. But within those boundaries, I'm going to give you problems and let you play this game yourself in a way. A lot of us, when we first go into leadership, we want to play the game. Like, we're the coach player, and it's hard to be the coach player and the coach, right? Your team it's too confusing for the team. So yeah, to go back to your original question, when do you know you're ready or when do you want to do it? A lot of people do it because they get more money, right? It's a good or bad reason to do it. I think it's a terrible reason to do it. Just because, again, if you're not ready to do it and you're not good at it, you don't want to do it for the right reasons, then it's not a good reason to do it. For me, it came down to, I can have a bigger impact if I can learn to work through other people. With 15 people on my team, I can accomplish much bigger goals than I can if I'm doing it with my own two hands. So if you get to a point where you want to work on bigger problems, then leadership might be interesting. If you get tired of learning JavaScript, the next JavaScript framework might just knock you out completely. And you can, you know, you can maybe go into leadership. For me, it really is about, with some of my organizational stuff, I want to change the world, right? I can't change the world as easily as a single developer as I can as a leader who can inspire and bring people on board to help solve problems, whether it's for med students or whether it's for great technologists who want to become great leaders. I can do that better through leadership than I can through technology. I can have a bigger impact that way.
Right. So you're still solving a problem. You're just not solving the same problem that a developer is supposed to be solving.
It's true.
If someone is trying to make that transition, is there any kind of a hallmark that they can pay attention to that will let them know that they need to stop because they're trying to solve the wrong problem?
Well, there's a couple ways I can take that. So, yes, I am solving problems today. My biggest problems today, what I do today as a leader more than anything, is I try to get agreements. Okay. It's not as sexy or fun sometimes as programming, but that's the problem I'm trying to solve today is how do I get, whether it's people on my tech team to agree on stuff, whether it's business, you know, two different stakeholders in the business disagree on stuff, whether it's the business and my tech team disagrees. So my job right now, the problems I'm trying to solve is how do I get agreements? That's the bulk of what I'm doing today. I would say as much as possible, like if you're sitting in that point where you're a tech lead, where you're hands-on contributor and a leader, you've got to try to find a way that you can isolate. If somebody comes to you with a problem, you've got to find a way to help them think through that problem, to coach them through that problem, but you've got to give it back to them. And if you find yourself not willing to do that, or what I would do back in the day is after about 3 minutes, I would get frustrated. I could see the solution and they're struggling. So eventually I'd be like, just give it to me. Right. Which is the worst thing you can do. That's the worst manager ever.
You've got your face in your palm, in the palm of your hands, and they're lost.
Yes.
So how do you combat that issue?
You hire better.
let's say we're already past that point.
No, it is. So it's coaching problem solving. It is, making sure that they're clear on what the outcome is, make sure they're clear on what the problem is that we're trying to solve. Are they clear with where we're trying to go? Now that we have some clarity as to where we're trying to go, what are our options? And if they're struggling with options, you can help them with options. How do we pick an option? Okay. It's an issue of asking them these questions, not telling them. Okay. And it is an issue of having to be patient. And you have to learn your team. You know, some people on my team, I can take a much higher level problem and in 5 minutes we can figure it out and I trust them and they can go. And some people I know I'm just gonna have to spend a little more time with. But it is an issue as a leader that you have to learn how to do that. You have to, number one, you have to learn how to become a good problem solver yourself, but then you have to learn how to coach problem solving, which is one of the first things I think you should learn when you go into being a leader. But nobody taught you that. Nobody taught me that, right? This is just something you just have to learn. So that, to me, that's the way you have to handle it. You just have to get better at coaching problem solving.
I'm asking specifically about that one because I find myself in that kind of situation. I'm technically I'm the front end tech lead, and you know sometimes you're just like, oh well, just do this because it'll fix it.
Yes,
but you know you want to like, you know, guide them but not tell them, and sometimes it is a struggle.
So one of my favorites was, we had a team. So this was years ago, so 15 years ago, 12, 15 years ago, we had built, there was a team in India that had built up a data entry port of an app. And then a US based team built an analysis and dashboarding part of an app. And it was a SQL database, .NET front end on our side, but they were using Java because they were a Java shop and they were normally a Java Oracle shop. And Oracle SQL, at least back then, you couldn't just interact with them the exact same way. Like with Oracle, you have to be very handsy with transactions. In SQL, you stay pretty hands-off with transactions, and SQL will take care of itself. Well, they were trying to interact with SQL the way they would interact with Oracle, and it was just messing everything up. And for like this went on for like 6 months, and we would just have the app would just crash, and it'd be deadlocks and all this stuff going on. And we'd go, our stuff was fine. They're locking the database. Why are they locking? So eventually it came down to a point where I said, go find me 3 articles on interacting with SQL from Java. Okay. And then the next day they came back and they go, breakthrough. Hey, we had a big breakthrough. We figured this out finally. But it really came down to, I didn't want to read the articles, but I just wanted to make sure that they were doing the things that they needed to do to learn and discover these things on their own. So it really was as basic as that. Like, you know, to go to Google and just Google it and figure it out. Sometimes they might not even be thinking that way. So you just have to point out the obvious at times. But like I said, you can't, I don't think you can treat everybody the same way. But if you don't do that, you're going to frustrate yourself and burn yourself out as a leader. So you just have to learn how to do that or get a better team.
Yeah, I've found that dealing with my five-year-old, that if I'm starting to get frustrated, it's because I'm failing to communicate in a way that he can understand what I'm trying to ask him to do or to stop doing. And then I really just need to adjust my approach. And then sometimes I just need to take away the toy or whatever.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. I hear that a lot. That leadership is a lot like parenting. And it is true. It's a lot like it.
So in your Future Proof talk, I believe it was that one at Codepalooza, you talked about like the different levels of leadership. I don't recall what they were, but would you share what those are?
So what really stumped me when I got into leadership and what really frustrated me is that I studied hard to prepare myself to become a leader. And when I get out there, I fall on my face. Right. And the reason being is that I studied the wrong things. When I sat down and kind of broke this apart, there's actually 28 topics in leadership on four different levels. So it's not hard to pick the wrong topics if nobody points you in the right direction. Okay. So the four levels are lead yourself, which is a lot of the future proof stuff. It's how do I become the role model for my team? How do I become what people should model themselves after, which is problem solving, decision making, time management, those things, right? Lead yourself. That's level one. Lead a team is level two. Getting good at coaching, getting good at delegation, getting good at understanding how culture and purpose drives engagement, project management, hiring, how do you lead meetings? Those are some of the core things in the lead a team level. And you may get to that level and you may stay there your whole career because that's where you love to be. Nothing wrong with that. You know, that's if it is the case, there's 14 topics to study instead of 28. Okay. Lead a department is a third level where you get into much more, I think. I spend probably part of my time at this level and the next level where a lot of your job is resource planning, personnel development, getting agreements, negotiation. Negotiation isn't with vendors. Negotiation is in the company. It's with your boss. It's with your team. You spend all your time negotiating and getting agreements. That's a lot of a job of a departmental leader. That's a manager or director level. And then the fourth kind of level is organizational leadership, which again is people they're kind of have to change the world. That's their mindset. Their mindset is, and to do that, they have to get good at what is our vision? What is our vision strategy? What I would call vision strategy, which is, you know, how do we want to change? Who do we want to help? How do we want to help them? Cross-discipline leadership, business development, marketing, sales, you know, high-level operations, partnerships and relationships is really big at the organizational leadership level. You can't change the world by yourself. So how do you bring in the right partners and people to help other organizations potentially help you do these kinds of things? So there's really those four levels. And the problem I had is I did a lot of organizational leadership stuff when I should have been doing team level. You know, I should have been studying the lead a team stuff and I studied organizational. So I studied hard. I just studied the wrong things. And so what I hope to do with learnleadership.org and some of my other stuff is to help people not make the mistake and to have a more realistic track of what they should study when, you know, based on where they are in their career and where they want to go.
So what can people find at learnleadership.org?
So right now it's pretty thin. We're just kind of getting it started and I'm working with a handful of other people just trying to figure out where we want to go with it. I think the vision I'm trying to answer two core questions, which is what should I study? Again, 28 topics. What should I study? So let's answer that question. If I want to help great technologists become great leaders, there's 10 different ways I could do that. So I think I'll learn leadership from doing two things. What should I study when? And what are some high yield resources for each of those topics? And that may be that we do book and resource recommendation, podcast recommendations, things along that line. There's a lot of different stuff out there, people to follow. Like if you want to become a better learner, what are some good resources to help you become a better learner? Well, here's some high yield stuff that we've curated and listed out. So if you're working through these things, here's some things you can do. I would like to do some interviews. So again, I was talking with another guy who speaks a lot on hiring. He would explain and teach hiring a little bit different than I would. But we all learn differently. We learn by what we can relate to. So some people are going to relate to him and some are going to relate to me. So if we can both put up a 15-minute quick start guide on hiring, then as you get into hiring, one of those is going to resonate more than the other. So can I bring together some people like that and do some interviews? So we're still trying to figure out exactly what we're going to do with it. It's definitely kind of a pre-MVP that's out there now. It's not even really a total product, but it's mostly so I can start talking to people and can start looking for the other people who want to help champion the cause and the cause of helping technologists become better leaders. And so we'll see where it goes in the next year or two. It's been kind of fun to get it to this point, but we'll see where it goes.
Is there anything that any of our listeners could do that might help you with your efforts?
Yeah, I mean, it's if people have an interest in leadership, if there are resources that they found valuable, if there are particular topics that they have an interest in, they don't have to be an expert. Like, I wasn't an expert in hiring when I started putting stuff together on hiring. That's how you learn, right? You learn sometimes by teaching. If there are specific things that they are interested in, they can. There's a get involved section on the site, and you can fill that in, and I'll reach back out to them. As we get into audio and potentially video production, there's some stuff even on that side. So even if you're not content centric, but you're more technically centric, then there may be some ways like that I can help plug people in. As well as just general technology. I think there's some other things that have been kind of floated around, groups, you know, being able to group people together into cohorts to help them learn together. So there's potentially even some technology things that we might want to try to build into it, but I would like to do that in a much more like an open source, community produced way, as opposed to, you know, try to build out, you know, some company around this. This is to me more of the community getting together and trying to solve this problem. Collectively is where I can hope I can take now where it's going to go. I don't know. You know, it's like any other startup. You start and you go down the path and you find people who may be helpful and you see where you end up. So that's kind of where we are.
So obviously you gave the talk Future Proofing Yourself, which is very, you know, it's very specific advice for people that are kind of the technologists. But do you have any specific advice for people getting started in the industry?
So I would say, be yourself. There's no single one way to do this, right? There's not a super developer who's going to come behind you every 5 minutes and bag on everything you just did. All right. There may be, but they're the jerks of the industry. They're not the average people in industry. So go forth, do your best. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Don't feel like you have to do it this one certain way and it's going to be perfect. As I said, when I got to Microsoft, I was bringing ideas and concepts that were somewhat novel and unique, and that was very well appreciated. Okay. So even in places that you would think as rigid and as academic at times as someplace like that can be, that's not always what's valuable. Then you're just another voice, you know, but you're not really standing out in any way. So definitely be yourself, find real problems to solve. Like I talk to a lot of people coming through code camps and doing things along that line, and they keep waiting for the next class and waiting for the next class. And I'm like, just go build something, right? Is there something that's kind of interesting that, you know, I learned how to code because I thought it would be cool to have some kind of photo sharing site. Okay. So I just started coding stuff out and it never went anywhere, right? It sat up on a shelf. That was the maker version of me, but that's how I learned the code is. So I built like Flickr before there was Flickr, and I built a Facebook before there was a Facebook, and I built all these things before they ever existed, and they never saw the light of day. But what they helped me do is learn how to code better. So if you're just getting started, just code, just build stuff. That's how you learn. So yeah, I mean, I think those would be, you know, those would be probably the two biggest things that come to mind that I would suggest. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that seems like some sound advice. Do you have any upcoming events, speaking engagements, or kind of any other announcements that you'd like to?
Yeah, I'll be at Pittsburgh Tech Fest, June 2nd, which I'm not sure when this will air. That's the only thing I've got booked so far this year. I'm starting to put some stuff together. Some of the talks I'm doing, I'm going to start trying to go to some of the meetups around the Midwest and deliver some of those talks as well. So if you might keep an eye out on some of those things as well. And you can also follow me on Twitter, which I'm not super active on Twitter, but you can definitely catch me on some of those on where I may end up.
Okay, that was the next thing I was going to ask you was there any other place the listeners could keep up with you? So
yeah, I'm on Twitter at T Scott Drake, and tscottdrake.com is a site I just put up that I'll also post upcoming speaking and some of that stuff as well.
All right, thank you, Scott. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Hey, you're welcome, guys. I enjoyed it very much.
That was Scott Drake. Scott is a tech VP in medical education. He's the author of The Programmer Hiring Playbook, a crash course in interviewing and hiring for your real-world needs, and he is also the founder and curator of LearnLeadership.org.
If you liked this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us at Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash.